Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Hello, welcome. It is May 6, 2020, and I am recording my first podcast. Welcome. This is Ramona Houston, and this morning I am interviewing Dr. Risa Houston, who is my youngest in sibling, and she's the most spoiled. But anyway, I wanted to welcome her. Welcome, Risa. Risa, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Good afternoon. Yes, I am the younger sister, and I don't like to use the word spoiled. I prefer to use the words that I was aware very early on of how my life should be lived and all of the great things that should be provided to me whenever I need it or want it. And I just, the family, you know, fell in place accordingly. So that's my introduction.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about yourself and your work, Risa.
So I am a veterinarian of many things, but professionally I'm a veterinarian. As a veterinary professional, I founded an organization, Assistance Animals Consulting, in which it is a niche organization where it's employed by other veterinarians. I employ other veterinarians, and our purpose is to help guide animal-assisted interventions. So help provide guidance to healthcare providers who are wanting to use animals to support the health and wellness of their patients. We collaborate with human healthcare providers along with the individuals who are needing animals for their care and support. We guide the strategies in supporting the overall healthcare. So we come in providing guidance from the vision of supporting the animal and how the animal can more appropriately support the person or support the healthcare plan for the person. And we want to ensure the health and wellness of the animal as an animal is supporting the health and wellness of the individual.
So you're talking about animals being involved with healthcare of people? Is that what you're saying? And so, if so, could you explain that a little bit more?
So yeah, so for example, we all are aware in some way, shape, or form of how animals support human healthcare. For example, CNI dogs, that's the most common and the most used initially of this aspect of veterinary medicine and human healthcare. But since human eye dogs, this aspect of healthcare has progressed to other things, such as service animals, service dogs that support individuals with autism, service dogs that support individuals with post-traumatic stress disorder, service dogs that support individuals with mobility issues or who are hearing impaired or even deaf. You know, when you go beyond service animals, there's now an increase in prescription of animals to support people with different mental health conditions. And so emotional support animals, in which it can be any type of animal, honestly, can be considered an emotional support animal. So whether that's a bird, a rabbit, a snake, a dog or cat, you know, different people have different emotional attachments to different animals. And so we help guide the mental health provider that is supporting their patient who are having mental health challenges that their health may improve through the benefit of being bonded to an animal, regardless of whatever type of animal that may be. Then there's the aspect of people who are doing physical therapy, you know, and there's the use of an animal to help in their physical therapy routine, guiding that process and ensuring the health and the wellness of the animal in that process. So it's really kind of, it's very specific, but there's a large scope to it. We can move beyond, you know, the healthcare in a sense, and even look at animals who are now being used to help children in education. You know, there's research where children reading to animals or dogs, it helps improve their reading abilities. And so animals are now starting to be used in schools a little bit more. So we support and guide those types of programs.
That's very interesting about how you talk about how animals can assist with the health and wellness of individuals as well as assist with learning. As an educator, I found that very interesting. I'm real curious, how did you get into founding this organization, Assistance Animals Consulting? What was your evolution?
So it's very unique. I realized my first year in vet school that I would most likely be a non-traditional veterinarian. Veterinary school is 4 years, and in that 4 years, you get exposed to, well, at least at the institution that I went to, Tuskegee University, we got exposure to all different aspects of veterinary medicine, particularly when we would have our annual conference symposium, where we would have a lot of alumni and individuals come back and give presentations. I recognized that most of the presentations that I was interested in was along the public health track. So in vet school, I recognized early on that public health I naturally gravitated towards public health in veterinary medicine. And so I initially thought that I was going to complete vet school and go get a PhD in public health and do something in that arena in veterinary medicine. Well, while in vet school, my father ended up having a health challenge that was related to his heart. And he developed a very strong relationship with his cardiologist in Atlanta. And so after my father's really severe health challenge, and he was back on the road to recovery, whatnot, and by this time I was out of vet school, and I had a dog that I used to travel with quite frequently. Her name is Roxy. She's like between 10 and 12 pounds, and she was a really good travel companion and, you know, home companion. But my father inquired to his cardiologist about getting him a service dog. Essentially, he and my mother, his cardiologist agreed to get him a support animal. And his cardiologist wrote him a letter for an assistance animal. And he and my mother showed up to my house and essentially requested to take Roxy. And they took her, and I didn't get her back.
And she still will.
Yes. And so then Roxy became my father's assistance animal. And so that leads me into how I got into the founding of Assistance Animals Consulting. So essentially, once my father started traveling around with Roxy, I recognized that there was never once a conversation with a veterinary professional. Now, I knew Roxy was healthy. I knew she was up to date on her vaccines. I knew that she had basic training. But it really startled me that here it was, my dad was traveling all over the United States with this animal, and there was never, ever a conversation with his veterinarian. And I know that because I was his veterinarian. And I realized, like, hey, there's a gap here. There's a gap here in this type of prescription. And from then, I started paying more attention when I was out and about and when I was traveling. And I started watching the number of animals that I was seeing in the airports and in the hotels. And I started recognizing some behaviors that were worrying to me as a veterinary professional, seeing animals in these public settings. And I said, hey, this is starting to be a problem. Someone needs to help in this process. Particularly a veterinary professional needs to be a part of this conversation and a part of this prescription process. And that's essentially how my brain started ticking and created me to the steps in creating this organization.
Very interesting. So do you feel like Roxy had an impact on Daddy's health, from her being around?
Oh, absolutely. I know of at least two different instances that I can vividly remember where I know Roxy impacted his health. So what we know, and I think it's a American Heart Association put out a statement talking about how pets help heart health, right? Now, I don't know the reason behind Dad's cardiologist prescribing Roxy for him, but what we know is individuals with pets that have, there are certain health benefits to the heart for individuals who have pets versus those that do not, right? And the thought process is, you know, particularly in dog ownership, you know, there's the decrease in signs of depression and blood pressure. There's an increase in exercise. So specifically to your question with Daddy, I know for sure he would get up and move around more to let Roxy go out to potty and it increased his exercise activity, right? That's one specific incident. Then there is a second one. There's a second incident where his physical therapist was at the house helping him do some things, and he wasn't really focused or paying attention. And then Roxy came walking into the room and he looked up. And then the physical therapist in that moment, I specifically said, oh, I'm sorry, I'll move the dog. And she said, no, leave him. If that's going to keep him focused and get him doing what I need, which he started doing, she can stay. So there's the aspect of physical therapy there.
Wow. So pets can really have an effect on health. And thank you for sharing those personal stories. Could you talk about, as an African-American and as a woman, your experience being a veterinarian? Are there many African-Americans and Latinos in veterinarian medicine, and what do you see, and is there a need for more of us to go into veterinarian medicine? Just talk a little bit about the demographics of your profession.
So first off, as a female, now veterinary medicine has transitioned within this last, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so, where there are more females, particularly in vet school, than males. I've never felt like a minority as a female in my experience in a room in veterinary medicine. But in regards to being African American, and specifically to your question about Latinos, the veterinary school I went to is the most diverse veterinary school in the United States. And I had the benefit of being with a variety of different ethnic groups. Tuskegee has a strong relationship with Puerto Rico. So a lot of my classmates were Puerto Ricans. We have a lot of Puerto Rican students that attend Tuskegee University to acquire their doctorate. And so in the broader scope of veterinary medicine, I remember when I was in vet school, and I don't know the statistics now, but when I was in vet school, our dean used to give a presentation on the diversity of veterinary medicine in the field. And our, compared to other medical arenas, veterinary medicine is the least diverse. I want to say the statistic was like, it was 3% African-American or something like that, or less than 3%. And I think Latinos was even lower than that. So we're not a very diverse professional organization. And I don't know the statistics specifically for Latinos, but regardless, we're not a diverse professional field.
So one of the things we need to do in order to increase the number of African Americans and Latinos in veterinary medicine is we have to promote education, higher education. So could you talk about your institution, Tuskegee University, and what advice would you give young people, or older people for that matter, who want to pursue careers in veterinary medicine? What advice would you give them in terms of their educational trajectory?
So, you know, applying to a veterinary school is very competitive. So I would say that it's important. I can't tell you how many times I've had people tell me, I've always wanted to be a veterinarian. I always wanted to be a veterinarian, and they didn't, you know, complete that process. And so I would say oftentimes it's very common for a child to have an interest in veterinary medicine at a young age. And it's up to counselors, family members, whether it's the parents, the aunts, or the uncles, whoever is around, to help provide that child exposure in whatever way. My first job, I got through a friend of my mom's working at a vet clinic. And so you gotta get the exposure. Two, I would give the advice of, you know, staying sound in your academics, because veterinary medicine is so competitive, not just in your formative years, K through 12, but even when you move on to undergrad, most of the time your prerequisites for veterinary school are the sciences. So you have to have high scores in your math and science courses. My particular advice, particularly in undergrad, don't allow anybody to sidetrack you on your goal. I had a major professor tell me I didn't have the grades to get into vet school, and I almost changed my pathway. So you have to keep yourself around people that are going to help you stay committed to your goals that you committed to yourself. And then even from high school, from middle school, high school, and in the collegiate level, most veterinary schools have programs for students for the summer. I would highly recommend looking into the veterinary schools in your state or neighboring states to find out what programs they have to help you along that track.
Great advice. So this has been really good to talk to you, sister, and talk all about you and your professional trajectory and assistance animals consulting. If anybody would like to get in touch with you, how would they contact you? And are you on social media? Where can they follow you? Tell me, how can people get in contact with you?
So yeah, Assistance Animals Consulting. You certainly can follow our organization, Assistance Animals Consulting, on Facebook, LinkedIn, as well as Instagram. I have a personal LinkedIn, Risa Houston. You can follow me there. In regards to phone number, if you have questions regarding animal assisted interventions or therapy, you can reach me at, you know,
you have an email office, email address,
which is info@assistanceanimalsconsulting.com.
Sounds great. Sounds great.
And that's assistance, ASSISTANCE, animals, ANIMALS, consulting, CONSULTING.com.
Great, great. Well, this has been great to talk to you, sister. And will you come back and join us for another podcast?
I would love to join you anytime. I love supporting my sister by birth.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Love you. Talk to you again soon.
Okay. All right. Have a good one.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And, of course, our featured guest.